We're speaking now with Stephen Bradshaw. He's currently a Bonner County Commissioner, but he is the Republican candidate for Bonner County Sheriff. Steve, thanks for taking time to speak with us. Let's start with an introduction for voters. Tell us a bit about your background, how long you've lived here, how you wound up here, and what you consider to be experience and qualifications for the office.
Moved here in 1988, and grew up in Texas, and it's hot, it's flat, and hunted in Colorado a couple times with my dad and thought the first chance I get to move to any place that's got a mountain, I'm going. And the opportunity to come to North Idaho came up, and so I took it, and I think it's the best move I ever made. I've watched a lot of changes over the last 35, 36 years. Grew up doing construction, mechanic work, heavy construction, large commercial projects, things that I did, and moved up here, scaled down to do a little simpler, and that got more complicated and grew into bigger things. And so I saw a need for some change in county government, so I ran for commissioner the first time, got it, ran a second time, got it, finishing up a four-year term now, and that will have been, had me in there for 6 years. I was looking at running again for a two-year term, and the things that I've watched over the 5.5 years, I decided, let's see if we can get somebody to run for sheriff. He's run unopposed long enough. And there was a couple of law enforcement people that were considering it. And I had a discussion with a retired one and said, well, if either one of those guys will step forward, I'm not going to run. And they decided not to run. And so I thought, it's time that we fix some issues in the sheriff's office. So that's why I threw my hat in the ring. I've watched a division grow within the sheriff's department that should not be there. There are some relatively new deputies. I don't think we have any bad deputies. I've never met one. The sheriff has always maintained that we don't pay our deputies enough, and that's the reason they leave. I've known most of them since 88. A lot of them have retired since, but I've yet to known one and talked with one that left because of the money. The last 5.5 years, the current board and the previous board has consistently raised their pay, and we've got them. We had them pretty marketable until Kootenai took a big jump last year, but we're still not losing them because of the money. There's several of them that were looking for a place to go because they did not like the way things were in the sheriff's department, and that relationship needs to be fixed. When you have two sets of clubs or cliques, however you want to call it, in an organization where you have a management clique and you have the guys that are actually doing the work on the street, and there's friction between those, that's poor leadership, and that's all it is. It's poor leadership. And if you look at the current sheriff's organizational chart, which I have watched for 5.5 years, it resembles a funnel standing on its point when it should be exactly the opposite. We have deputies that have been on there 5, 6, 7 years and have only communicated with the sheriff on less than a dozen times. And so they have no relationship with their boss because he doesn't get involved with them. That's a problem right there. Several occasions he's come forth in our county commissioners' meetings and publicly spoke out things that I knew were absolutely not true. And on March 28, 2023, he did that. And I thought, you know what? It's gone on long enough. And I called him on it. And it caused some division between me and him. But if you don't want to be called down for saying things that are not true in public, don't say things that are not true in public. That's the easy solution to that. But the fact that a law enforcement officer would blatantly misrepresent or say something that is not true is totally unacceptable. And in the industry nationwide, it's a one and done deal. If you're a police officer, a deputy, law enforcement of any kind, and you publicly lie, you're done. You'll never be a credible witness ever again. Any defense attorney would keep that in his resume forever. He would target you every time you went to court. And so that's the reason that every agency, that is a cause for dismissal. And so it's totally unacceptable when the chief law enforcement officer does that. It's a bad example for the men that work for him. It's a bad reflection on the honor and integrity of the office. And for me, I could not sit back and watch him go unopposed when I know for a fact I can do a better job.
Well, you answered my next question, which is going to be, why are you running? I think you answered that pretty extensively there. I want to come back on a couple of points you made there. But one of the questions I am asking all the candidates, if you're elected, how much time will you spend in the office on a weekly basis?
The first couple of weeks, I'll spend a lot of time in the office. After that, I intend to do a ride-along with every deputy that's on patrol, every detective, everybody in that office I am going to spend time with, and I will know their first name, and I will know them.
So you'll get out in the field with the deputies.
I will get in the field and work with the deputies. I will build that relationship and trust back with the management and the deputies that are actually doing the work, which is what should be going on.
Well, that goes to a couple of comments you made. First of all, turnover, and you feel that the sheriff is, through his administration, is creating a need for some people to move on. But you made the comment of a funnel on a point. So you feel that there's too much of a hierarchy and that some of the deputies can't get in touch with the sheriff.
Right. Doesn't really, he may say he has an open door policy, but the deputies do not feel that. And I've watched it. If you say something and you're a deputy and it's not palatable to him, then that relationship changes immediately, and that should not be. I think any employee should move up the ladder because of what they are, not who they are or who they try to please. It should not be a tickle my ear and you'll move up thing. It should be you perform to them expectations and you deserve.
Okay. You've already launched into what you consider the biggest issues in the sheriff's race. Are there other issues you think voters should be considering?
Some serious budget issues. I pulled the inventory on county vehicles for all departments, road and bridge, assessor, courts, all of them. There's 149 items that are dedicated to the sheriff's office that we have titles to. There's four or five boats, three Harley Davidsons. I'm not sure why we have three Harley Davidsons, but we do. Three Humvees. One is being saved as a parts Humvee. We've got seven brand new vehicles that were bought in 23 that no one's driving. They haven't been rigged out. There's another 7 to 8 new ones that have been rigged out that are waiting to be assigned, while we have deputies on patrol driving cars that are 10, 12 years old with over 200,000 miles on them, And my question would be, at what point does he get a call and that car not be able to perform? So why are they not in the newer vehicles? And the other less critical employees, in other words, the ones that are not actually on the street making the calls, why are they driving the nicer vehicles? That's an issue. That's taxpayer funding being misused. And we've got brand new vehicles from 2020 all the way up to 2024 that are not being utilized. And the ones that are 2020, 2021, 2022, if they're on a 3-year warranty, the warranty's expired before they ever roll down the road. So that's
what, have, poor you, management. Have you inquired why these vehicles aren't in use?
Yeah. I haven't got a good answer. But Saturday at the forum, I had mentioned that it shows over 150 vehicles, and the sheriff chuckled and said, I'd like to see those. I said, so would I. And I'm going to. So I'm going to get with our risk management guy, and we're going to inventory the assessors, the courts, road and bridge, sheriff's office, everyone that has cars assigned to them. And we're going to put an eyeball and a finger on every vehicle that Bonner County holds a title to.
Which you can do right now as a county commissioner.
Right.
Yeah. So you're intending to get that ball rolling soon?
And find out what we're keeping that's old and dilapidated, and why are we keeping it? Our emergency management, our assessors, we put them back in lease cars that have a buyback guarantee and rotate them so that they've got good vehicles all the time that they can depend on. They have to go here and there. And that has not been done with the sheriff's office. Most agencies, Road and Bridge does it with the vehicles, road graders. Dump trucks, you can't do it because they get beat up so much with the sanders and the plow, and that, yeah, there's nothing left when we get done with them. And, but your sheriff vehicles, all that could be on a rotational where you don't have to worry about replacing all of them at one time. Over a 5-year period, these are getting rotated in and out. And you would see your maintenance costs drop drastically. You'd see the performance of the vehicles up increase. And it's just basic management stuff that's not being done.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I have a few issues I'd like to ask about. And here's a question I posed to your opponent, actually. What kind of grade overall would you give for operations by the Sheriff's Department? Areas that you might feel are good, but areas that you see need improvement. You've already mentioned vehicles.
Right. When I moved here in 88, there were 3 to 4 deputies on patrol at any given time. The number of people working for the sheriff's office was way under 50. Here we are at 2024, our population has went from 20,000 to 53,000, and we still have 4, sometimes 5 deputies on patrol covering 2,000 square miles with 93 employees in the SO. Why is there only 4 deputies on patrol? So that's an issue. We don't need that many deputies sitting on their butt or doing whatever it is they're doing. Like I said, his organizational chart, you look at management, and there's more in management than there is in actual workers. Now, if you need that many managers, are our deputies that incompetent? I don't think so. I start to see a favoritism which causes the division within the organization. And it's like a football team. You got an A string, you got a B string, but they're still on the same team. They still communicate. They still work together. And when need be, they'll rotate in and out. And That's the way it should operate. Mm-hmm. You keep up good morals, everybody's happy with their job. If you become dissatisfied with the work conditions, the money is a second issue at that point. When you get to where you don't like your job because of the management, that's a serious issue. If you don't like your job because of the job, you picked the wrong career. But if you picked law enforcement, you picked it most likely because you're dedicated to that type of work. And if you've got a good working relation with your management, the money is secondary, although it is a factor, especially in today's market.
Especially with the cost of housing we have here, that's a serious
issue.
Affordable
housing is like, wrong county. It's non-existent anymore in Bonner County. Mm-hmm. Well, North Idaho.
Okay, to dig in on another question here. So at the candidates forum at the high school about a week ago, a question was posed that referenced the county sheriff being that of a constitutional sheriff. And I think you're familiar with that term, but what can you expand on what the concept of a constitutional sheriff means to you?
Well, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, don't really have the date, but I think it was 1898, there was case law, Mawbury versus Madison, and the court decided that any law that is passed that is contradictory to the Constitution is rendered null and void. And over the past 50 years, and over the last 10 years especially, we've watched that be ignored, where you have overreach of different authorities. And COVID was a perfect example. Our governor came out and said, you can't assemble in church. You can't assemble at your house with more than 10 people. I'm sorry, this is America. If you want 20 people to come visit your house, that's your call, nobody else's. And so Panhandle Health District passed a mask mandate. They tried to pass a vaccination mandate. Those are all constitutionally protected activities. That's your choice as an American citizen. The governor, the president, has no jurisdiction or authority to make those mandates. I will not uphold them. And in 2020, I actually opposed them, wrote a really nice letter to our governor that he did not find that palatable, but it is what it is. I went down to the Panhandle Health District when they passed their mandate and told them, well, that's nice, but I have no idea how y'all are going to enforce that because you're not legislators and you're not government. So good luck with that one. Bonner County is open for business. If our citizens want a vaccine, they can go get one. If they don't want one, they don't have to go get one. If they want to wear a mask, they can wear a mask. If they don't want to wear a mask, then don't wear a mask. That's the individual's choice. That's their God-given right to make their own decisions when it comes to their health and the things that affect their lives. And that's a government overreach. The difference between law enforcement and constitutional law enforcement, they'll go back to that Mawbury versus Madison. Anything contradictory to the Constitution is null and void.
So case in point was COVID restrictions.
Yeah, that was a big turning point.
But let's look at the question, you know, like a little bit broader here. So interpreting the Constitution and how it's applied to a particular law, it's usually the role of the courts and ultimately the Supreme Court. Do you think the sheriff is empowered to determine if a law is in violation of the Constitution and just refuse to enforce it?
He has the discretionary power to judge each event. Everything is kind of like a human. It's a unique thing and a piece of land. It's the only one exactly like it anywhere. And even though similarities exist, he can make that judgment call as to whether or not he's going to arrest a person for a certain thing or not. That's up to him. some things are pretty plain. You went in the bank and you tried to rob it, you're going to jail. That's the simple side of it. The other, you're not wearing a mask. The governor said you have to wear a mask. The governor can come down and tell you you need to wear a mask. I'm not going to arrest you for exercising your own personal rights.
Okay, here's another question that came up at the forum a week ago, and it was having to do with militias. So that's groups of citizens who carry out firearm training and actually have their own command structures for some possible future conflict that might come up. The state has had in the past a prohibition on private militias, though I don't know that it's really been enforced anywhere around the state. And there was a Senate bill that would have eliminated the prohibition on private militias. As a chief law enforcement officer, as sheriff, you know, what would your interaction with militias be?
Well, previous commissioner, Mike Nielsen, when the Antifa thing came up here a couple of years ago, that this was going to be an issue, there was a relationship that had been built somewhat between the militias and the sheriff's department, and that got severed for some reason. I don't know why. But Mike Nielsen went, there were basically three groups, and he went to them and said, look, guys, what you're doing is the right thing, but there's three groups of y'all, and y'all don't know each other. That's a problem, because if there is an issue, and you come from the south, and this one over here comes from the north, this group shows up with a bunch of guns, and this group shows up with a bunch of guns, and they don't know each other, and they think the other one is the bad guy. And y'all end up shooting each other and making a bad situation a catastrophe. And so he actually got them together where they communicate. They've got communication language that they know who they are, what's going on. And he did that to coordinate with the sheriff, and our sheriff was all on board up until the time that came time to actually use those volunteers on a regular basis and keep that relationship built, where he could call on them in a catastrophic event. And they'd show up not only, you know, for protection purposes, but disaster, storms, whatever. I mean, we're North Idahoans and we help each other. Kootenai County was the safest place in the United States when Antifa showed up and was going to do their parade in Coeur d'Alene. Why? Because the sheriff there has a relationship with the militia and the groups, and they were on every corner and street in Coeur d'Alene, and that was the safest place in America.
Well, we had them here, you know, yeah, in our downtown.
And some of our guys showed up here.
Well, and there wasn't any Antifa. There were some high school kids.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, the word got out that this is what's happening. And so these citizens came and said, you know what? We're going to help protect this, our county. We're going to help protect our city. And we're going to help protect our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And Idaho State Constitution demands that there be a state militia, but there hasn't been one for years and years and years, but it's still in there. And so if you have that relationship with volunteers, Sheriff Norris in Coeur d'Alene has 500-600 volunteers for things like that and for different, for storms, for whatever it takes.
For those sorts of things.
Right.
But guys carrying guns need to have a level of training.
Absolutely.
And how do you ensure that if they have private groups that are doing their own thing?
That's why it's important that your local sheriff and police chief are involved in that, so that they can make sure that the members of your group are going through or have been in some type of training and de-escalation training. Otherwise, you end up with somebody there, doesn't know how to handle a gun, doesn't know the five rules of having a gun, and well, that's how accidents and things happen.
So I guess the question that would occur is, wouldn't that be the role of the National Guard if we really needed a group to confront a threat of some sort?
And here's the deal. The National Guard would be great. But let's say something is going to happen today right here in downtown Sandpoint. We can fill the square up here with volunteer citizens in 30 minutes. When's the National Guard getting here? 2 weeks after the event, when the governor decides that we're going to call in the National Guard and it's over? Response time is everything. If you're the guy having a heart attack, the ambulance getting there is a big factor for you. 5 minutes versus an hour and 5 minutes is a big thing.
So okay. We're going to run out of time. It always happens.
It does.
I want to ask just a couple more questions. One is having to do with the fairgrounds. The fairgrounds have had the county commissioners and the sheriff at odds. The sheriff published a report last year indicating that up to $247,000 had been misappropriated at the fairgrounds over a four-year period. Now, the county commissioners have voted to conduct an outside audit, which is it underway?
It's underway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But before that, there was a proposed RV park that the sheriff wanted to see held as that land held for potential use as a justice center. Can you weigh in on your position on the fairgrounds?
Yeah.
Multiple things.
The fairgrounds runs on a tight budget, and it would allow the fairgrounds. We need about $2 or $3 million worth of repairs at the fairgrounds. Those buildings are older than you and I. And the RV park is using a piece of ground, would be using a piece of ground that has set fallow forever and created nothing. RV park, it's still a flat piece of ground, but it's generating revenue for the fairgrounds. And that money would go to the fairgrounds. And in the event we got enough money to build a new justice facility,
I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah. It's not that big a deal to have Northern Lights or Avista come out and unhook the power to the RV park and shut the water off. It's not that big a deal. But in the meantime, it would have been built with your federal and state dollars, actually state dollars, coming back to Bonner County, no additional cost to the taxpayers.
There was a $473,000 grant that was actually approved
by
the state.
So it's our tax dollars coming back home, which would have cost us nothing, would have generated money for the fairgrounds, got a lot of that stuff repaired and fixed. And in the event that you're going to build a $200 million justice facility system, not a big deal to move that or take it out. It's just not. So it's good management. But if you're power hungry and you want to build an empire and have a legacy to live, to leave behind, which I don't think me or Daryl, either one, will be around when a $200 to $300 million facility is put out there. I actually invited him into my office whenever he wanted to, and I'd show him how to build a new facility out there and how to get it paid for. I'm waiting for a response on that, and that's been over a year.
And we are out of time here. Stephen Bradshaw, a Republican candidate for Bonner County Sheriff, currently an incumbent commissioner. Last words here. How can people weighing how they want to vote find out more about you?
You can reach me at sbradshaw320@gmail.com, or you can locate me through the county commissioner's office. Or you can locate me at Kokalala Cowboy Church because I'm still a full-time pastor there.
Okay, Stephen Bradshaw, thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you.